Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young, was so much.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of that studio and just across the way, George P. Fraser. George, it's lonely at the top, isn't it? I mean, something we'll never experience, but I hear it's lonely at the top.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
It's lonely at the bottom, too, Bill. I can attest to that.
And it can be lonely in the middle. So we need Jesus. And what we love doing at Real Recovery is telling stories of redemption and telling stories of people who were dead in their sins and now alive in Christ and have recovered from alcohol addiction and are addressing all of their concerns. Tonight's story is going to be interesting, George, because we're going to talk to Renee Danbury, and she has a treatment program which addresses not only addiction but mental health issues. I think that's a wonderful combination.
Well, it's something that we need to talk about. No, I sure do. Anyway, that thing about being lonely, I called a friend of mine yesterday who moved out of state away from all of his, you know, community. And he said, oh, gosh, I'm so lonely. I just love you, George. I'm so glad you called. I got to run. I got to feed my cat. And I thought, no, it's a true story. And I thought, gosh, guys, just like I am. I think, Bill, we always do a step on this program. And tonight I wanted to talk about step one, where we admit we're powerless over alcohol and that our lives are unmanageable. We're powerless over a lot more than alcohol. And our lives are unmanageable in all areas if we don't let Jesus lead our lives. We don't talk about this enough, but there's underlying mental health issues for everyone, I think everywhere, unaddressed. They might not be pathological or something that we could diagnose, but we all worry too much, Bill. And we have fear and we have all things and we don't talk about it. And I think one of the great things about recovery communities is it's okay to talk about things. And tonight we're going to talk to somebody who works at a place where they treat mental health, addiction, the whole gamut of your life. And I'm so for that because, Bill, you know, a lot of the guys we've been working with over the years don't get sober because they only address the sobriety and not the mental health issues. Mm-hmm.
George, looking at step one, what are some misconceptions about this step? When, you know, you say you're powerless, that doesn't mean you're weak, does it?
No. My next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God, that there's a limit to what we are. And the way I read this step for me is the reason my life's unmanageable is I'm trying to be God in my own life. I'm going to make the decisions. I'll bring him in when I need him. And I think a lot of people do that till they hit a real crisis that maybe the job that they got at the top isn't good enough. Maybe their relationships aren't good enough. Maybe their kid has a problem with chemicals and all of a sudden they've got to look at real core issues. And I think we have to look at eternity, Bill. It's there in our heart that a lot of times things don't make any sense unless we look through the lens of eternity. That's what I think about being unmanageable and powerless is. We aren't the alpha and omega here. Does that make any sense?
It does. And I want to encourage people as they listen to George talk about step one is admitting you're powerless over drugs and alcohol. Just so you know, if you do that, that requires or will require a lot of honesty and courage, and that's a good thing when you can accept the fact that the alcohol or the drugs have simply taken over your life.
Yeah, usually it's pretty obvious. I know in my case I was in jail, but that was, you know, things aren't not flying in first class here. But what happens is the Holy Spirit convicts us at the same time offering hope for us. But I think lately in our modern age here, Bill, we can talk more about mental health issues. And I know for me, I have not just drinking and doing drugs as my problem. I have a lot of other issues. And I think for people, if you're listening tonight and you quit drinking or gambling and you're doing great and you're still not 100%, There's a reason for that. You're not at 100%, and we have other issues. People think just because they become Christians, everything's going to be super and great. Eternally, it is, but you have work to do. Jesus said you have to pick up your cross. You have to deny yourself daily. We have to put off the old. We have to put on the new. And that requires being honest, as you said, Bill, about that we have problems. And number two, having the courage to do it. What I always find is I lack a lot of courage and honesty. I pray to get both. Pray for sobriety before I get out of bed in the morning. It works.
Mm-hmm. And George, isn't it a struggle for people because they never want to think that their addiction or their attitude or what they're doing has become unmanageable? They always think in some capacity they're in control, they've got this, and that ends up with a lot of obstacles for people getting to that first step.
Absolutely. I remember, and I told you this, that I was in grad school, and we were studying ADHD, and I asked a real good friend of mine who was a counselor. I said, you know, I might have this, and he said, might? You have it worse than anybody you've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't okay for me to have that. But I had it. It doesn't matter what we're okay with. Reality is reality. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through the Son. And we don't get better unless we pray to God to be honest and have him show us what we need to work on. He'll bring people into your life to help you.
Mm-hmm. Well said, George. So I think we will take a break and then bring on our guest, Renee Danbury. She's a licensed alcohol and drug counselor at Christian Family Solutions. You can go learn about that during the break at ChristianFamilySolutions.org. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Ryan working controls. We'll be right back.
Can get it wrong and still think that it's all right.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. We've been using that song for a while, George. It's probably good for us to stay in a certain habit, a certain routine, so we don't get confused, huh?
You know, I don't have PTSD with that one like I do help. When I hear that song in the car,
I start sweating.
I think about you and I start, I get nervous.
So George, I think it was last night, maybe I was watching the news and there was an interesting story on the relationship between people who are struggling with addiction and mental illness. Apparently, it's very rampant in homelessness in particular on streets around the U.S. and are we doing as good a job as addressing people's alcohol and drug addictions and dealing with their mental health issues as well? That's the big question tonight.
Yeah, I think we can improve that a lot. And Bill, in my history in the field, I've never met anybody that just had an addiction problem. So this should be an interesting show to hear what she has to say and what they're doing. So I'm looking forward to this a lot.
Me too. Renee Danbury is our guest. She's a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, and she is at Christian Family Solutions. And they really have a lovely dual diagnosis program. It's faith-based, and they also help clients with mental health. And it's kind of a team approach. So we're dying to hear about it. Renee, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. We do. We offer kind of one-of-a-kind treatment. I feel like I have been working in the field since 2007, and I have this is my third organization that I have worked with, and this is truly the first organization that has been able to be co-occurring and definite dual diagnosis. And when we look at what true dual diagnosis is exactly what you both said, is to just treat the substance use or just treat the mental illness or the mental health concerns separately doesn't always give the best outcome for long-term recovery. And so when we look at a true dual diagnosis program, what we're looking at is treating both the substance use disorder and the mental health at the exact same time in the same treatment program. And so that's exactly what our program does. We offer the exact same amount of hours for our outpatient treatment program to focus on mental health as it focuses also on substance use hand in hand.
Renee, I'd love for you to give us a little sketch of the model and the methods that you use in your program.
Yeah. So a lot of our model that we follow is a lot of the faith-based, so we use a lot of integration. One of our main components is that we want to be able to heal and help people in need through the ministry of Jesus Christ. And so the methods we like to use is integrating both information on the mental health along with the substance use, and the best way to do that is to have a method where we have a variety of providers coming in and meeting with our clients. So I focus on one of our morning groups, and those clients will see four different providers or up to four providers while they're with us. That way they are seeing all different perspectives, and it is that team approach, and that's one of our biggest methods is allowing the clients to see that it's just not one person, but there is that team helping them recover.
So when somebody comes into the program, do you do an assessment or do they do that before they come in? Can you kind of take us through what a person would go through that goes into your program?
Yeah. So how it starts is in order to get into a substance use program or even a mental health program is you would need that assessment or that diagnostic assessment if it's mental health focused to determine what is the best way to treat this individual and what type of service they need. And so we offer assessments here to start. Otherwise, we do have a variety of clients that come in already having an assessment recommended to our program, or they have come from a higher level of care like an inpatient program or a residential program, and then they're referred to the continuing of care to come in and work in an outpatient basis. So we can start the whole process and keep them here. We can help them go elsewhere or somewhere that might be a better fit for them, or we have them referred straight to our program.
Now, I know you two are both licensed counselors, so I will be the person asking the more pedestrian question, which is this. If you are involved in an addiction over time, can that addiction produce a mental illness?
I can speak to that first. Yes, I definitely think it's hard to know sometimes which comes first, if it's the mental illness, if it's the substance use, and specifically what you're asking with that substance use being primary at the beginning, can mental health stem from that? In my experience, what I would say is, a good portion of the time, clients that we work with have some underlying mental illness concern, some type of a problem or a fear within their life where they have struggled to face it, and they have turned towards substance use as a way to deal with that. And so as we diagnose and as we get to know these clients and work with them, we do find that there are those underlying concerns or problem areas that we can start to focus on. And in being a dual diagnosis program, we're able to treat that right here so that they don't have to go somewhere else. They don't have to be referred, that we can identify those problems as they occur and help work with them right in those moments.
Yeah, I think that is a great answer. And what I've seen, I've been a counselor for, I don't know, 27, 28 years. Bill, the clients that I work with today are a lot more needy than they were at the beginning. And what I mean by that is there's no real garden variety alcoholics anymore that we see. It's poly substance abuse. There's mental health issues. And the last gig where you and I met was down at the Salvation Army. And in that time, from the year 2000 to now, the clients need more things. They have more issues. And the old thought was you treat the addiction first. It's primary, progressive, chronic, fatal. And then you work on other things. Well, what we've seen is the outcomes are getting worse and worse because the treatment modality, the method that we use, was focusing just on the addiction. And what she said is right. I think you treat the whole person the whole time is what I hear you saying. Is that correct?
Yes, 100%.
And yes. That should give us better outcomes.
Yes, no, I completely agree. And I actually have, if you don't mind me sharing a little story of a client that I recently was working with that kind of ties into this perfectly.
Please do.
If that's okay to share.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so we have definitely changed this individual's name, so I'm going to go by the name of Annie. So when Annie first came to us here at Christian Family Solutions, she talked about how she was living a secret life. She thought nobody knew about it. Nobody knew what she was up to on a daily basis. She had been abusing drugs for years and described her life as living in a fog. She was full of depression, shame, guilt, trauma, but she didn't know what any of those things were. She just described it as being in a fog, and she said she had lost all joy in living. And until something abruptly changed in her life, she said that there was this sudden awakening and others started to intervene and others confronted her about her use and were calling out those feelings that they were seeing. And she said for the first time she saw the look, especially in her children's eyes, and she knew that was the moment she needed to stop. And what she realized is she needed to stop using the one thing she thought was comforting her, which was her substance use. But in the end, it was truly destroying her life and the lives of those around her. And she jumped into our program having never had treatment before, never had an assessment, no legal issues, no nothing. She jumped in all on her own, and she is now 6-7 months into her treatment, and she is finding joy. She said she never knew what the word joy meant before, and she said it's real joy. And she is present for her children. She's present for herself. And she said she was able to see that for so many of the past years, she was just trying to comfort herself from all of these feelings she never knew she had or that they existed. And I think that's a perfect example of a client coming in thinking it was all substance use, not realizing that there were mental health concerns and there were things she was hiding from and things that she never wanted to look at. And the joy that I see on her face every single day coming in now and being released from some of that is huge. And another large piece in all of this with this client is she did not have any belief in God or a higher power when she first came in, and she has just shared the meaning of Jesus and God in her life. And we end every group session with the Lord's Prayer, and she closes her eyes and folds her hands, and as she prays, she says that those words mean so much to her, and that's one of my favorite stories to share.
Renee, one of the things you said that struck me was the one thing she thought that would be comforting her was her using, and Boy, talk about walking into a lie.
Right. And I think with our program too, besides just being dual diagnosis, we have that faith-based component. And I am so lucky to be able to share a resilient recovery curriculum once a week with our clients. So 1 hour of our group every single week is focused on resilient recovery and walking through the Bible and walking through certain verses out of the Bible and how does this relate. And we always start with a law and we end with a gospel, and being able to see the resemblance of addiction and sin and how a lot of times that mimics a lot of that. We recently talked about, you know, sin being stealing, lying, all of those types of behaviors, and addiction being that exact same thing. And so just that freedom and finding that forgiveness is a huge thing.
How do you help people? So you're an LADC, a licensed alcohol drug counselor. So you would work, I'm assuming, with the person to help them to stop using and develop some sobriety. What method do you use for doing that?
So I think one of the best methods for doing that is just helping them see their progress. So our goal as a treatment facility is for people to remain sober. That's one of the key components of it. But it's allowing them to see the choices that they have and the role that they play in that, and having that communication and so much motivational interviewing and just talking with them. And in the beginning, sometimes it's just allowing them to see that somebody else cares. And the other factor is that they're not alone. And so I think a lot of our methods vary between clients, but it's really just helping them find some of that worth and what that substance use was covering up.
Do you refer them to ongoing recovery groups? Do you have them do recovery work that has certain tasks to it, heading to a goal? How do you lay that out for them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So a lot of treatment programming is individualized. I am a firm believer in that opposite of addiction is connection. And so how do I help you find positive connection? And so once you do leave treatment, because that will happen at some point, what are you going to have on the outside? And so we're always talking about support group meetings, your AA, your NA, your Al-Anon, your ACOA. But a lot of my clients are really finding a lot of hope in our Celebrate Recovery. We have a great Celebrate Recovery community in Mankato, where they're going in, they're worshiping, they're doing small groups. And so just really kind of promoting that, I've learned that you can push it, but if you push it too much sometimes, they kind of withdraw a little bit. So just really talking about, like, what is out there for support, what is out there for connection, and the ways to find that. The other unique thing with our program is that once our clients complete group and graduate from group, they continue with their individual providers after that for that ongoing continued care, for that continued support as they transition out of group and to determine, okay, now that group is done, what type of support are you going to have? Research shows that long-term treatment is the most effective. So if we're getting to the 6 months, the 8 months, and we're stepping down in treatment programming, that's seen to be the most effective. And so not just completely ending it, but developing the plan with them of, you know, what is going to work, what is going to be the most helpful for you.
I totally am on board with that, Bill. We've talked a lot that recovery really starts when you get out of treatment. I know it starts when you're in treatment, but people get a false sense of security about how well they're doing when they're in an environment where they really can't use without a huge penalty. Mm-hmm. And they get that sense that they're doing a lot better than they are. And then they get out in the reality and the world, and people are still using. They have the same problems they had when they went in, but they have some coping mechanisms. So that's really good. The longer the treatment process, the higher the rate of sobriety and recovery, no question.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging.
Really encouraging. Let's take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We've got Ryan on the board. As always, our special guest tonight is Renee Danbury from Christian Family Solutions, healing and helping people in need through the ministry of Jesus Christ. We'll be right back. Listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We've got Renee Danbury as our guest, the Renee Danbury. She's a licensed alcohol and drug counselor and is at Christian Family Solutions, where they help people with not only their addiction, but their mental health issues. It's an interesting dual approach, and I think it's very interesting. George, right before we went to break, you had some brilliant thought, which you often do, is that recovery starts when you leave treatment. And I think a common thread that we've heard on this show over the decade we've been doing it is when people started caring for me and showing love for me and accepting me is when my heart started to open. And it sounds like, you know, Renee, your story that you shared in the first part of the show was very much that of this woman who felt like somebody really loved her and listened to her and cared about her. And that's so critical. And sometimes it's the hardest part because people alienate themselves from people that are they're close to and they love, and their friends and family start feeling like they're giving up on them.
Right. That's, yeah, I think that that's 100% true. And I find too, in working in the field, is that sometimes they're treaters. And when I use the word treaters, they're therapists, they're counselors, they're caseworkers, all these people that are helping them. They find sometimes that they almost care more than those that they thought cared inside of their addiction. And that can be very scary too, just to slowly open up and see that person that people are truly seeing from the outside and the capability that they have to make those changes and truly appreciate the person that God created them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to trust other people when you rightly don't trust yourself. And I think at that point, most addicts and alcoholics don't. I wanted to talk a little bit about, and I think it's great, Bill, that we treat at this facility mental health, addiction. To me, they're the same thing. Addiction is a mental health issue. But we used to just treat the addiction first, right? And a lot of our clients can't hear us because of their mental illness. So you've got to treat both things. But what I wanted to talk about, I think salvation is the key, because you can get sober, and if you're not saved, harm reduction at the very best, right? But we have two separate issues here. We have sobriety and we have salvation. And I don't think getting sober ensures salvation any more than getting saved will ensure you're sober. How do you walk that out at your facility? And do you agree with that?
So that can be a tricky one. We obviously, our name being Christian Family Solutions, sometimes that catches our clients or people off guard when they come in. And one of the first things I tell everyone, because we will work with any type of a client, any beliefs, anything like that. And what I always tell our clients when they first come in is the only thing that I ask of you is that you remain open-minded, and that as part of our treatment and our curriculum, we are going to talk about faith and we are going to talk about God and Jesus, and we pray and all of those types of things. And so just to keep an open mind, and it's amazing to see how when they keep that open mind, what they slowly start to believe. And I'll jump to your question in one second, but a story just came to mind too, is I had a young male that came into the program and he had never heard the Lord's Prayer before. No idea what the Lord's Prayer was. And we close our groups with the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. And one day he just asked and he said, "What is that prayer?" And so I sat down and I explained it, and I have a picture of it hanging on the wall, and I said, "I would invite you to just look over it. This is what it is." And the next group, 2 days later, he started praying it. He turned around and he said the whole prayer. And as he was walking out, he's like, "That prayer makes so much sense and feels good." And so those are some of those moments too, of just being able to introduce that faith. There's a, when we go back to your question about the salvation and the sobriety and being saved, there's a lot of question that comes to this from our clients of, "I've done so many things in the past, I'm never going to be forgiven." I've had clients say, "I can't go to church, the church will burn down." And so just talking through a lot of, you know, no, like that's not the truth of the matter. And we just did a lesson on that we are actually forgiven before we even repent. Repentance is a huge piece in our belief, but God has already forgiven us when we get to that point. And so we've talked about that exact thing that you brought up of, you know, just getting sober, does that save me? You know, does that change all of that? And how does that work? And I guess, you know, it's just keeping that open dialogue with them and sharing the beliefs of the true word of, you know, what we need to practice and what we need to believe and how we need to turn to God and how we need to not utilize others, things such as drugs and alcohol, as a way to escape and as something that's the most important thing in life, and how we slowly bring back in those beliefs and what do we practice in going to church and going to meetings and utilizing prayer and that conversation with our higher power, and then we talk more about that salvation and how we are saved when we come to those beliefs with him.
I love that. I got convicted in my own work. I worked for a lot of secular places. Being a Christian myself, I wasn't allowed to talk about it, and I got about salvation. I got convicted of it finally. Had a real ethical problem. Why do I believe this for me? And I don't care enough about my clients to share it with them. So I'm all over what you're talking about. The concern, I think, for a lot of times is we as Christians can put out that, you know, it is a miracle and it's a mystery about salvation and faith. But Jesus also said, you got to pick up your cross and deny yourself. And Paul wrote in Ephesians about putting off the old and putting on the new. There's some work to be done here, and it's hard, but it's worth it when you know what you're pressing on towards the goal, as Paul talked about. So I like that. And Bill, what I'd really like to talk about is the ongoing walk with people. I know a lot of people who listen to the show have early sobriety, and maybe they're in and out of recovery. But to keep going, again, can you talk a little bit about the continuum of care that you provide?
Yes. So that is one of the most important aspects, and you touched on that before when you said recovery really starts when you leave the treatment program. And it is ironic how so many come into treatment and they're confused, and am I supposed to be here? Do I really want to be here? And by the end, they're asking to stay because it's become comfortable, it's become safe, it's become routine. And so that continuum of care for us is making sure that as they decrease in their sessions and as they're moving back out into that community, that they have that continued support. So they're meeting still with their mental health therapist. They're meeting with myself as their counselor. We offer aftercare programming, and what that is that's one group a week for our clients that have completed programming. They can come in once a week for an hour, and it's a support group, and it's led by all of us counselors. We take turns, and it's a place, a familiar place, because they come back here to our office. They're with clients that have completed the program that have sobriety, and they get that support, and we're seeing them utilize that. We're also helping them get connected in the recovering community and helping find sponsors if that's what they choose, or connecting them with churches, with people that will meet them and go those places. And so that real continuum of care is not when they finish, okay, good luck, follow these 8 things that are on your plan. It's we're walking those 8 things on the plan with them. Do they have their medications filled? Do they have a doctor? Do they have a caseworker? How can we coordinate all of this?
That sounds great.
That sounds like you really care.
Yes, yes. There's definitely a lot of care.
I can see that. That's very impressive.
Yeah, and I think it's important, too, when we talk about, like, the clients, we also haven't talked a ton about just as, like, working in this field and with my colleagues and with others that are in different programs, because at the end of the day, all of our goals are to help clients and to help them be successful. But one thing that's very unique with Christian Family Solutions, too, is not only what we put into helping our clients, but the investments that are put into all of us as counselors and professionals to help in all of our own growth and to make sure that we are taken care of too, and lots of trainings, especially on like faith integration and how do we help clients and, you know, how do we truly live out to what our purpose is and what our mission is helping each and every person through Jesus Christ.
I love that. The other thing is it's a tough job. And a lot of people that I think anybody who's a good counselor, who's a Christian or not a Christian, is in recovery. Let me explain that. If you're a Christian and you're not in recovery from what you used to be like, you need to look at that. And a lot of people who are LADCs are in recovery from chemicals themselves. It's kind of God's call on their life. You got to maintain that. You don't get that by osmosis. And you can't give away something you don't have So you got to keep your walk going and you got to keep sharp. You need to, as they used to say, have a lot of self-care in this, because when you're working with other people, it can be real easy to stop taking care of yourself.
Yeah, that's 100% accurate. And yeah, and it is, it's a job that, you know, we care, I care about clients, we all care about them. You know, there's nights you go home and you think about them and you want them all to be safe and you want them to be taken care of. And so, yeah, it's important that in order for me to take care of somebody else, I first have to take care of myself. And my clients would tell you that I remind them all the time, you cannot pour from an empty bucket. And so our buckets need to be full first.
Love that. It's Bill, we've worked with quite a few guys who've died.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a little nick out of you. They say that you detach, and you do. But I don't think if you didn't care, you would be doing this in the first place. And we are human, and we have to really rely on the people we work with. But most importantly, our walk with God has to be good. Fair?
Very fair. And I also am impressed that Renee's program has so much aftercare and so much follow-up. And sadly, some of the people that you and I have known and worked with who have relapsed and died, I wouldn't say with great confidence I knew what their plan was going forward, or if they adhered to their plan, or if they worked it out, or if they just went out and relapsed. So,
I think a big piece for a lot of the guys we work with was unaddressed mental health issues too.
I agree. And I, George, your point is well taken. I think I see more of it today than I did 5 or 10 years ago.
And from my standpoint, when I was working as an LADC, I wasn't qualified to provide the care that everyone needed. And we'd wind up, you know, farming that out because we didn't have the people in our building as she does. Gosh, that makes a huge difference when you're all on the same team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like the crisis management, and if we need to have, you know, somebody seen right away, or we've had it before where you're in group and something triggers something and is traumatic, that we can go get a mental health provider, we can go get another counselor, and we can help that client exactly right where they're at that moment. So it's not, well, let's schedule an appointment for next week. Like, no, we can help you. And Christian Family Solutions offers a 24-hour crisis line. And so our clients on the weekends, at night, they can call. And if it's a client that I'm specifically working with, I will get a full report the next day when I come in that they called our crisis line and how they walked them through the information that they needed at that point.
That's very impressive. Renee Danbury is our guest. She's a licensed alcohol and drug counselor at Christian Family Solutions. You can head over there to ChristianFamilySolutions.org to learn more about that ministry and recovery. We'll take a break. We'll be right back with lots more Real Recovery. Bill and George, and of course, Ryan on the board. Recovery is the most fun you can have on Sunday afternoons at 5 and Saturdays at 3 p.m. Central Time. We've got a special guest today, Renee Danbury, a licensed alcohol and drug counselor at Christian Family Solutions. You can go to ChristianFamilySolutions.org to learn more about that. And Renee, I think right before the break or during the break, you had mentioned a story you've got that is a lovely report on a woman understanding faith, and I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. So this is a female that we had in our program for quite a while, and I had just asked her as an assignment to just kind of sit down and write what comes to mind when she thinks of faith and where she's come from and where she's at this point. And this was actually something that she posted on one of her social media pages and a media page that is for recovery specific. So I'm just going to read exactly what she wrote. She said, if anyone uses the old using me against the new sober me, I will not get angry. You will not bring me down to your level of misery. I will, however, pray for you that one day you will forgive me and my wrongdoings. I will pray that you yourself can acknowledge your character defaults and behaviors and use them to learn to become a less bitter and less angry human being and welcome a new improved you without having to put someone else down so you feel better about yourself. Because does that really make you feel better? Are you a better person because you got a jab in on someone else? If so, please bring Jesus into your life. And in the meantime, I will pray for your pain to go away long enough to see the hand being held out, waiting for you to grab hold. I am a stronger, more beautiful person than I once was, and I will embrace everything I have learned and I continue to learn. I refuse to let anyone treat me the way I used to find acceptable because I have learned I am worth so much more. I will call you out when things are not going correctly. I will set boundaries and I will follow them. I will not let you consume me or any of your behaviors. I will walk away and continue to do me to the best of my ability until I have the life I deserve, even if that means that I walk alone with God, because I know He is the one constant and He is always right there. And that is from a female individual having no belief when she came in our program, or if she did have a belief, she very much questioned it. Very, very rocky past. Many things that happened that we talked through of, if there was a God, why would He have let these things happen? And just walked through finding some of the roles she played in some of the pain she had and how God helped her through so many areas of her life and how He guided her to Christian Family Solutions and to recovery and what He continues to provide day after day. And I think she wrote it out perfectly to really look at that changed human being that we see in recovery.
What a hope there.
Oh boy, no kidding.
A lot of hope there. And you don't get that without Jesus. And when people come in, they don't have hope. And gosh, that was just great.
Yeah,
thanks,
that was very, very moving, Renee. Thank you. So, Renee, here's a scenario. Let's say your adopted child who might have had a little fetal alcohol syndrome and now turns 18 and is extremely rebellious, possibly mental health issues and using, and the parents are perplexed as to what to do. What would be your counsel to them?
So if they called and looking for what to do, I would encourage them to come in and to meet with someone so that they could talk further about what they're seeing. I would encourage them to schedule an assessment for their child, to just go through and evaluate. An assessment is that tool that digs deep into all life areas to see where are there some problems or where are there some concerns. The other thing I would encourage is as they're dealing with everything that their child is going through, they are probably, if there are fetal alcohol effects, if there are other things going on, they're probably struggling themselves with why is my child like this or what role did I play in this? So I would definitely encourage them to seek out some of their own services also. And in the meantime, while they're waiting for possible professional services, as I would encourage support groups and I would encourage resources in the communities, because there are so many resources if people just reach that hand out and they look for them.
Yeah, I was saying that the child was adopted, so the child had some fetal alcohol issues and was adopted into a loving home and now is at a point of kind of rebellion. I think your counsel is good. Evaluations are important, but there also is a willingness that the person needs to be cooperative. And I guess that's kind of a tricky thing too, when they're that young and that rebellious, how do you gently, lovingly try to add some, add an invitation to do it where they respond. Maybe that's part B of the question.
Yes, and for part A, I apologize, I left out that adopted piece.
Yeah.
So obviously that creates a whole nother element and a whole nother level to the situation, because they don't know maybe family origin or all of those types of things. And so they're raising this child and loving this child and trying to probably question what is going on, how do we best help this. And so I think you're exactly right, is we know that we can't force anyone. We can just support, and we can offer suggestions. And sometimes it's just the listening piece, and it's just allowing people to know that they're not alone and that they're not doing anything wrong. And I think specifically with children or that early adolescence or later adolescence, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, I've really found too is sometimes it's just sitting down and saying, you know, let me know what's going on. Because a lot of times things will slowly come out of, I'm feeling this way or this is happening, and they just really haven't maybe had someone to listen to them or someone that completely understands. Because I do think we see both mental health and substance use as a way people respond because they don't know how else to respond. And then they question, what's wrong with me? Because I'm acting this certain way. And I think sometimes we just need to have that compassion and sit down and say, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. There are elements and there are a disease possibly, or mental health concerns, substance use. There's all these other elements that are happening, but there's nothing wrong with you as a person. We have to treat these illnesses so that you can be who you want to be. And I think that's a big piece of it.
Well said, Renee. Thank you for that. I know parents can go through a lot of conflict and turmoil, wanting to bring tough love to the table, wanting to love their child unconditionally, but also not wanting to continue to see them live their lives without consequences. So it's a difficult challenge for sure.
Right. And I think, too, when we look at, like, tough love, I always remind parents that I work with, or even children when their parents might be struggling, both sides of it, is that tough love doesn't mean that there isn't love. Tough love means that you love someone so much that you can't continue to watch them hurt or harm themselves, and so you have to step back. And it's a protection piece of it. And so sometimes it's easy for people to say tough love is just, I'm going to shut you out and nothing matters. Really, tough love is saying, I can't be a part of this right now, but I do love you probably more than you even know. And so it's kind of taking that back seat, not because you don't care, but because there isn't anything you can do in those moments.
You know, that's a great topic, and I can't think of anything worse. And sometimes the bottom line, and this is going to sound harsh, is do you want your kid dying in your basement or out on the street? And with the fentanyl, that happens a lot. And I always, when I'm asked, tell people, you don't want to enable, you want to keep loving them, but you've got to do what you can live with, worst case scenario, so you don't spend the rest of your life going over what you could have done differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because people die. And what you brought up about the people going in for their son, they need help too.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't agree with you more on that. And what a tough situation it is for a lot of parents.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, good point. George and Renee, I think we need to do this again, because this has been a wonderful hour. It's all the time we have, though, believe it or not. Georgie, that wraps up another award-winning episode of Road Recovery.
Great show. Yeah, thank you for doing it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having the conversation and allowing me to be a part of this. This is wonderful.
You bet. Thanks, Renee. ChristianFamilySolutions.org. That's all for this award-winning episode of Road Recovery. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Baby. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.